Maverick News, the antivirus program for your mind. And now, the Freedom Reporters.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Maverick News Channel. And let's welcome our regular contributor, Kevin Michalitzi, back as well. Hello, Kevin from Crimea. How are you tonight?
Hey, Rick, from the beautiful Costa Rican beaches and the wild monkeys. I'm doing well.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Thanks for coming in tonight. It's important to have you here to get your perspective and analysis with what is going on between Iran and Israel, and of course, the United States, Russia, the rest of the world, as a result of everything going on there. So I'm grateful for you coming in tonight.
Yeah, thanks. Just crazy stuff.
It certainly is, and scary stuff for everybody, because it's a major escalation that we've seen happen in the last 24 hours with these drone and missile strikes against Israel. You have, some pretty credible contacts. You get good information. What's your assessment of the success on either side of this battle overnight?
Well, I think Iran had great success in what they intended to do. I would agree with a lot of analysts who are saying, gee, they didn't hit much, they didn't destroy anything, and, Israel, was the great winner here because they shot 99% of everything down. But, everyone talks about how this was supposed to be an absolutely devastating attack on Israel because of the number of drones. I've seen numbers from 100 to 300 to 500 drones. People are talking about hypersonic missiles and that Western air defense saved Israel. But reality is Iran knows what they need to send to overwhelm the air defense and to create a deterrence there. If they wanted to do serious damage, they would have escalated well beyond what people saw. They would have sent 4, 5, 6 waves in. They have the weapons to do it. They do have hypersonic missiles. I see a lot of people saying that they were used. Reality is, I don't think they were. I initially told you much, much earlier in your day that, they may have used them, but the hypersonic technology that they're using, they got from Russia in exchange for the drone technology that Russia got from them. So I believe if they used hypersonic missiles, they would have hit what they wanted to destroy. Now, there was a little bit of damage on, an air base. Most everything was shot down. But, imagine if Iran had launched 1,000 drones and 500 ballistic missiles alone over a period of 12 hours. Israel and the West would have been helpless after the first couple of waves. So I think Iran's whole goal in this was simply sending a message that we can halt your shipping, we can penetrate your air defenses, even when we've given you 12 days of preparation and foreknowledge of exactly when and where they were going to attack. Israel's known this. The United States intelligence released, reports that they were going to strike, probably tomorrow, going back a day. And so it's obvious they knew when Iran was going to attack. They had 12 days of preparation, and Iran very well could have overwhelmed them very easily.
Yeah, so I think very insightful, and so you're saying that in your view, they're really trying to send a message more than inflict really serious damage. Why? Because they don't really want major escalation. Is that what's on your mind?
I don't think Iran wants war with the United States. And from the reactions out of the U.S. White House, I don't think the U.S. wants a war with Iran. So, you know, they sent this wave of attacks, and then they said, you know, as far as we're concerned, it's done. So that puts the ball in Israel's court. Israel wanted to do an immediate strike. Well, we can see that maybe the United States has reined them in and told them to calm down. Yet we've got Israel flying to Russia, demanding that the Russian foreign ministry, you know, support them and say that this was an absolute awful thing, that it shouldn't have been done, condemning it basically. And Russia basically flipped them the finger and said, you guys are a bunch of hypocrites. If you, you know, if Iran or Russia or anybody else bombed a U.S. diplomatic mission somewhere, they would have immediately gone in and they would have justified it under the self-defense article of the UN, just like Iran did. So I think by, you know, doing this limited attack with fairly limited weapons that they have, it's really just telling Israel, you guys need to back off or you're going to have bigger trouble with us. Yeah. So it was a good way to not escalate.
I said from the beginning, you know, I thought that even the way Israel responded to October 7th, they were, you know, falling into kind of a trap. It wasn't the proper response. They should not have retaliated the way that they did, in my view. Do you think that this has been, what's your view just on Netanyahu and the way that he has calculated his way through this? I just think he keeps making missteps, and this strike against the consulate in Syria seems to be one more and just one more major misstep. And I think finally, now maybe if they're able to rein things in, we're seeing finally cooler heads prevail.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's Netanyahu, his war cabinet, or all of them. You know, their actions make me question whether or not, you know, October 7th was really a, you know, a lucky strike by Hamas, or if they actually, you know, opened up the borders on purpose. So it's kind of hard to tell with what you see coming out of Israel. They do tend to react, you know, maybe without a lot of forethought. And I don't know, you know, it's a dangerous place they're going. You know, they're having their war over there on the Gaza Strip, and, you know, they keep blaming Iran for arming people, but they neglect that, you know, the very guys they ran to today demanding that they, you know, condemn this, Russia, are the guys that are over there keeping Iran and the guys like Hezbollah and, you know, all these other factions from attacking Israel. So, you know, I've heard.
Or maybe more accurately, escalating their attacks on Israel, because we have
escalating their attacks. Yeah.
Sending in rockets. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have people saying, you know, where will Russia fall in all of this? I don't think Russia wants to get involved in a conflict over there either. I think is what will happen if Israel keeps attacking Iran is Russia will just step back and say, okay, have at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Putin's relationship, Russia's relationship with Israel is very complex. I think they're, you know, their involvement in the Middle East overall is very complex. And I think that Israel has kind of misread their relationship with Russia, because it's been very clear to me that, you know, in recent months or recent years, even the relationship has been solidified more and more between Russia and Iran, because they're doing more trade, they're relying on each other for military support. Can you elaborate on that a bit for me and give me your perspective?
Well, you know, this is all because of sanctions. You know, you keep Iran sanctioned because you don't like what they're doing for so many years. They've developed their own economy. They've developed their own trade. Then they do the same thing to Russia. So Russia is going to, you know, link arms with other countries. And look at, you know, a good many of the countries that Russia and Iran are dealing with right now have been countries that have been put under sanctions, and they're just saying enough. You know, well, we won't sell you computer chips so you can build weapons. Okay, well, we'll go to the guys who can build the computer chips. You know, China, you know, they're kind of playing both sides of the fence too. They look like Turkey to me. Erdogan plays both sides of the fence often. Yes. So it's, I don't know. I think Israel has misread Iran. They've misread Russia. And quite honestly, I think with the statements coming out of the White House and their actions in all of this, I think they're misreading the support they have out of the United States as well. You know, yes. The United States said, we want no escalation. Iran said, we want no escalation. They made their hit. They said enough. And even though the United States is condemning the attack, they've said they won't get involved in retaliation if Israel retaliates against Iran.
Right. So they're saying they will not participate in any offensive action against Iran. So if Israel decides to do that, it looks like they would be on their own.
Yeah. I mean, the United States brought, you know, more equipment, more ships and stuff in, and it's apparent, you know, a lot of people thought they were preparing for war with Iran, but it's apparent that they brought it in just for defensive capabilities for Israel.
Yeah. What do you make of that support that apparently came from the United States, from the UK, maybe some other nations as well in terms of air support? And there seems to be some murky, cloudy, shadowy support as well, maybe from some neighboring Arab nations, including maybe Jordan, that people don't want to talk about too much. And if that air support, I guess, came in to help shoot down some of these drones, but it's the reporting on it seems kind of odd to me, with this suggestion that these Arab nations that are sort of supporting, like maybe Jordan, it's got to be very obvious all the way around who was actually involved in the actions last night. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's very clear. I mean, Iran said, we're doing this. And they've been saying it for, what, 12, 13 days now. So there's no question on that side. And, you know, the West supporting Israel and helping them, you know, shoot down drones and missiles. If it really actually happened, you know, we see a lot of video of incoming strikes of Iron Dome going off. But, you know, it's easy for everyone else to say, well, gee, you know, we shot down all this stuff. Well, you know, show me the money.
So, yes.
You know, so what was their involvement? Jordan, you know, I think the king of Jordan is in a very tenuous situation in this country. His seat is not overly stable. He's trying to, you know, play nice with his neighbor, with Israel, because, hey, you know, Israel could start expanding into Jordan once they're done with Gaza and the West Bank. But he also has his people demanding that he do something for the Palestinians. So I think he's really trying to play nice on both sides. They closed their airspace, yet all these drones and missiles flew across their airspace with simply a, you know, shame on you, Iran. It was really a weak, weak reaction.
Yeah. Everything seems to be getting more complicated, and it seems, and I even heard Alex Jones before the strike on an X Spaces talking about the complexities of the politics involved in suggesting that backdoor deals might even be going on between the United States and Iran, maybe even a three-way deal between Israel, Iran, and the United States, if you believe in conspiracy theories, right? But, you know, to some degree, it makes sense because you know that the Biden administration does have sort of a quiet relationship going on with Iran, as so too did Barack Obama, which maybe isn't such a bad thing because it might help keep the peace. And that might actually be the case here.
It's hard to say at this point.
It sure is, isn't it?
It's the day of here or day of there and day after here. I think we need to see what Israel's next, response is going to be before we can start, definitively saying this is what's going on. And I don't know if we'll ever know the truth. I'll be happy if people don't start nuking each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it seems that, this is why I think your analysis, Kevin, is probably the best that I've heard or read anywhere since, in the last 24 hours is, if Iran had inflicted really serious damage in this strike, it almost would have forced the United States to take major retaliatory action. I think you're right. I don't think that was the intent.
Yeah. Even if the United States didn't take retaliatory action, it likely would have caused Israel to, which then the United States is between a rock and a hard place again. So then they're forced into an election year war that Biden doesn't want. So, right. Yeah, Lori's out there. She was asking, how does Russia respond every time Ukraine attacks Crimea with drones and missiles? Well, I think it's a little different situation. Israel attacks with, I don't know. I guess it's pretty similar. Israel blows up their consulate and Iran throws a bunch of stuff back at them and then sits back and says, okay, now stop until it happens again. And I guess I see similar things between Russia and Ukraine when they attack Crimea. They shot 5 drones at us, night before last, and no retaliation. So there's 5 drones here, 6 drones there. They sink a ship and it's all done and over with. They blow up a concert hall and it's, they get a retaliatory strike. So I see similarities and differences, Lori. Just to kind of sidetrack a little bit.
Yeah, but, and I think that there, is some connection between, the two wars because of the relationships between all the countries. It's just, I think we're in a third world war and these are the centers of it. And so in that way there, I think they are related though.
Yeah. And you have the same politics going on in both of the wars. And, even you look at the United European Union against Russia over Ukraine, and even they're not united. NATO is not united. As big of a front as they try to put up and all the propaganda they're putting out saying, we stand as one. Yeah, well, except, what is it, the new Slovakian president or prime minister, one of those countries over there, that was just elected. And he's like, we're not going to give any more weapons, Germany is going to send 1 air defense unit to Ukraine. Now, let's see what they start sending to Israel to restock the Iron Dome. And I think that'll be pretty telling about what's going on behind the scenes as well.
And so in that way, too, with regard to the Iron Dome, is this a battle of attrition? If it continues to escalate, in your view, the Israel would need a lot of munitions to combat the incoming incoming drones and missiles that Iran would be capable of launching. And even in terms of cost per drone taken down, you know, proportionally, it's going to cost a lot more to shoot the things down than it's going to cost to send them in.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the reports I'm seeing is that that Defense of Israel last night cost upwards of over $1 billion in munitions alone. And, you know, so what is that per drone? You know, off the top of my head, I don't know. It should be easy math, but so.
Some of those drones, you know, you could send drones in that cost only thousands of dollars each, and you might have an F-35 up there providing air support and, you know, firing off munitions to take that thing out. It could cost, I don't know how much. I'm not an expert on the cost of shooting down a drone, but it can't be cheap.
Well, I just took, you know, $1 billion and divided it by 200 drones. That's $5 million a drone.
Yeah.
You know, and how much do they have stocked up? You know, it was great to defend 200-300 drones, but, you know, again, now they've got a break. They can restock from other countries that will magically find the air defense systems and missiles for Iron Dome that they don't have to send to anybody else. And but if you doubled or tripled or quadrupled the number of incoming drones and missiles, and I'm telling you, I don't care what anyone says, the hypersonic missiles were not used. The technique that Iran used is very modern Russian warfare. Overwhelm them with drones, send in some missiles, and, you know, if they can easily deplete those air defenses with massive swarms of drones, and those hypersonic missiles can't be stopped.
Yeah. You
know, Ukraine has never been able to shoot a hypersonic missile down.
Yeah, send in swarms and swarms of drones to just soften up the dome. And then send in the high dollar missiles afterward when they are much less likely to be shot down.
Yeah. And if nothing else, to identify where those air defenses are. You didn't see them striking air defenses last night. You saw them striking military bases. You know, so again, they could have easily said, you know, we sent these drones here. This is where the air defense is fired from. And these Kinjal, or I don't know what the Iranians are calling them now, hypersonic missiles, they can retarget them in flight. So, you know, they could take out a complete air defense battery in a matter of minutes or seconds while they're reloading.
And to pivot back to China, I know that China has come out and said they're not going to condemn the actions of Iran. So that's significant as well. And I think it further illustrates, and I'll get your comment on this, further illustrates the foreign policy of the United States sort of pushing Russia into the arms of China and Iran into the arms of China. And this axis or alliance, however you want to characterize it, of these countries coming together. And this seems to have solidified that kind of relationship.
Yeah. What's been going on since Trump was president? Well, we're going to, you know, they didn't call it imposing sanctions on China, but additional import tariffs. What are they? They're sanctions. And I think China looked at, gee, the West sanctions everybody that doesn't do what they want, doesn't drop into line, and we don't want to be in that position. So really, did the United States force Iran and, you know, Russia and these guys into China's arms, or did they force China into, you know, the other guy's arms?
Yeah, I don't think any of this had to go down this way at all. It's these crazy policies of, I would say, overconfidence, arrogance on the part of the United States, and the way that they used the U.S. dollar, the might of the U.S. economy to try to force their will on other countries, and a huge miscalculation.
Yeah. You know, again, I go back to lack of diplomacy. Who are the diplomats in this? You've got Russia sending troops to the border with Israel saying, you know, Iran, you guys, you know, stay back a little bit. They're the ones who talk with everybody. In this whole strike on Israel, who are the diplomats in it? Was it the Israelis who immediately wanted to respond with, you know, all their might? Or was it the Iranians for 2 weeks going, we're going to strike you. We're going to strike you here. And, you know, and that's it. We don't want a war with you. But it's hard to have diplomacy when only one side wants to talk. And, you know, this is going on all over the world now. You know, what's going on in the European Union with, like, Serbia? Well, if you don't apply sanctions to Russia, we're going to cut you off from EU funding. Oh, Hungary, you want to buy gas and oil from Russia to keep your people working? Well, then we're going to cut you off from EU funding. So it is this whole, you know, they've learned well from the United States wielding their dollar.
Yeah, and so now we see the formation of these BRICS countries, the alliance there, and this alternative economic system, which is going, you know, it already has split the world, and it's putting the United States and Western countries back on their heels, for sure.
Yeah.
This ship that was seized in the Strait of Hormuz, how significant was that with it happening just prior to Iran's actions?
I think it was just another message of, you know, we can shut down both seas if we want to, and we can cut you off economically from the rest of the world. You know, it was what, a Palestinian flagged ship under contract with, you know, Israel, with, you know, I don't remember.
Yeah. One of the major owners is Israeli, but it's actually a Pakistani flagged ship, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Owned by MSC, just off the top of my head. But, yeah. You know, we see this kind of thing going on with, you know, the United States has seized ships. Iran has seized ships. Everybody's out there engaging in these acts of piracy back and forth. They're all doing it.
Yeah. And like I say, I think if, you know, Iran really wanted to shut down either sea, it would have been, again, just as easy to simply blow them up.
Yeah.
You know. One ship relatively peacefully taken over really is just somebody saying, you know.
So it's more of a political message being sent. I mean, the crew, I don't think there was a single Israeli on board the vessel. It's just commissioned by an Israeli company, I guess, in order to transport goods through there. So just sending the message.
Yeah. I mean, same thing with ships that goes on with Russia selling their oil to, you know, India, the United States, everybody else. Well, we'll put it on this ship that's owned by this company and, you know, send it over there. And then it's not us anymore.
So I'm just going to check here because we also had here today the UN Security Council talking about this. Have you been able to look at any of that in any detail to give us any thoughts?
No, I was looking at some reports just before we went on air, and what I saw in the reports coming out of the Security Council is exactly what I figured. You know, with Israel going to Russia directly and saying, you will condemn this, and you know, the foreign ministry of Russia, like I say, many, many hours ago said, you're being hypocritical. And, you know, where have you been to You know, what's your vote been when, you know, our citizens were killed in Moscow? So, you know, Russia's calling them hypocrites. I didn't figure anything would ever come out of the Security Council meeting. And it comes back to, you know, that almighty veto power. Russia isn't going to condemn them. I think the best they would hope to get out of China is an abstention.
Well, we are seeing, you know, it was the UN Security, UN Secretary General and Antonio Guterres, he's saying, you know, they need to step back from the brink, that all sides in this have an obligation to work toward peace. That was basically the message coming from him.
Yeah, and, you know, he was criticized for kind of a weak response on it as well. I think it was the diplomatic response, which is his job.
Right. And then, you know, I was able to watch some of that today. I did take note of comments from all the key players from Russia, the United States, Israel, Iran. And the comments were all very predictable. They're just regurgitating the same talking points that we keep hearing over and over again.
Yeah.
Not surprising.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's the danger.
What do you mean by the danger? Because they're not going to shift their position or find compromise toward peace?
You know, what is the UN Security Council supposed to do? They're supposed to be diplomats. They're supposed to talk things out. They're supposed to ensure security of everybody involved, but they don't. They're a boys club. And, you know, my wife often says they're little boys fighting on the playground.
That was very apparent from what I saw around the table. Media coverage on this as well. I'd like your assessment on that, because as I was watching this happen in real time overnight, I saw the cheerleaders on each side, some of whom are portrayed as experts or pundits or analysts. And yet I'm watching video and you saw me here last night saying, now here's video of what it appears to be strikes, but take it all with a grain of salt. Yeah. I don't know if it's even real. And now here we are 24 hours later, and it is very apparent that a lot of what was out there last night was just a bunch of BS, recycled video, fabricated video, fake news. What did you see? What do you think?
When I got up in the morning, I looked at the Israeli reports, and they were, you know, the big, you know, gee, we had 99% success. They can't touch us. And I went over and I looked at Iranian reports, and they're like, oh, you know, great devastation. And, you know, it's like this airfield. Israel says very little damage. Mm-hmm. Iran says they put a missile slap in the middle of the runway. I haven't seen anything that has shown a hole in the middle of the runway. And I've seen videos of planes landing and taking off, but they show, you know, 5-second clips of F-35s, you know, dropping on some runway. You know, where's the proof?
Exactly. Yeah. Makes it difficult to sit in our chairs and provide accurate analysis too, because it's so hard to tell what's real and what isn't, what's just spin.
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody in Israel early this morning, my time, and, you know, they said it was scary. They aren't accustomed to drones flying overhead like this. But if you haven't been there yourself, you don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, it's... I have to say, you know, like I think your analysis is spot on. I don't really agree with the view that Israel just left things open on October 7th and just let it happen. I find that really hard to accept that. But I mean, I get the perspective on it. I just
Oh, and I'm not saying that's what they did either. Understand, yeah. It draws into question what really happened there.
Yes. And it's, you know, and I do see both sides on this story. I truly do. And when I look at the leadership on both sides, it seems to me they're just too willing to put people in harm's way to achieve their political objectives, whether it's trying to stay in power or whatever.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say, to kind of balance out what I said about, you know, did they leave the border open and allow it to happen? The other side of that is did they rely on their AI too much? They're taking a lot of flack over that right now with targeting whole families based on images that maybe sort of could be a Hamas fighter. So, you know, maybe they're victims of their own reliance on their technology. You know, they're great technologists. You know, maybe their technology isn't as good as they were hoping.
Yeah, well, I said that. Maybe it was to Lori in a message. But anyway, I said to somebody, technology only goes so far when it comes to defense like this. Even over time, you know, they have the Iron Dome right now, but now they have a hypersonic missile that can penetrate that. So what good is the Iron Dome? If they really want to inflict damage, they can do that now. The only real solution, long-term solution, has to be peace, because you can't continue to rely on technology indefinitely. Technology changes over time.
Yeah. And, you know, there has to be a real changing of attitudes to have that peace. You know, I've got friends from Israel who, you know, should be able to think with more of an open mind and talk about having open minds. Yet they're constantly, you know, Israel had no choice with Hamas. You know, we're constantly under attack from them. They're constantly, you know, ambushing us. And on the other hand, they don't look back at themselves and realize that they're constantly jailing Palestinians for pretty iffy reasons. They're, you know, killing Palestinians as well. So I think there's a lot of one-sided thinking going on in these conflicts.
Yeah, I'd say one-sided thinking maybe on both sides, which makes it very difficult, you know, to the table and come to resolution on this in a peaceful way. It's extremely troubling. What do you think Israel's going to do? Any predictions? I have no idea.
I'm surprised they haven't done anything yet, quite honestly. You know, so they've already burst what I thought they might do. I didn't think the United States, with, you know, what's been being said about the U.S. not being able to control Israel, I think that was kind of blown out of the water, too. Let's see how long that lasts. I think Israel figures the United States will always cover their butt, and maybe they've gotten this message that maybe not.
Yeah, you know, this is the thing. I've had that's the other piece, the other narrative that I've had trouble really swallowing, is that AIPAC controls everything, that Israel controls the United States. Yeah, there's influence there, no question about it. There's big money involved, no question about it. But when push comes to shove, at the end of the day, it's the United States that supplies the weapons. It's the United States that's propping up Israel. And I think we're seeing here right now a demonstration of the United States saying, whoa, you know, pulling back on the reins, just the way Russia is pulling back the reins, probably on the other side as well. Because if this does spill over, it really is
it's
risky.
Bad.
This is really bad now.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you see Israel, who supposedly doesn't have nuclear weapons, but supposedly does? We won't know till the day comes. They drop one nuke on Iran and we've just ended the world.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. It's pretty iffy.
And because the Iron Dome, the integrity of that, the effectiveness of it now seems to be in some question if they really do have the ability to overwhelm it with just sheer numbers, then already we're into a situation of extreme risk and degradation. Like it could easily spiral out of control if Israel feels that there's an existential threat to its very existence, right? Like they could go to that option very, very quickly now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it goes back to what Lori was saying about Russia and Crimea. You know, it's, I think this is a technique that Iran learned from Russia. I think there were consultations that went on and Russia said, look, this is what we do. It's successful with Ukraine. They had a bunch of air defenses. We overwhelm them. We take out their air defenses. And, you know, this could have been a, you know, move it from that part of the world to my part of the world. And just too many similarities. It's warfare now. You know, the Iron Dome was a great idea. The Patriot missile system was a great idea. They can't, you know, deal with these, you know, $1,000 drones coming in mass waves.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, the war hawks, the saber rattlers out there, I think that they misread what that technological advantage on the defense side really provided for them, which really technology like that buys a nation state and an alliance of nation states time to broker peace.
Yeah.
Without, you know, mutually assured destruction. But as soon as
you gotta talk. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You have to sit down and talk, not sit there and say, now we have the edge. Let's take advantage of it and push forward and exert more force. No, that's not the purpose, the proper purpose or proper use of an edge militarily and on the technology side. They misused it and now we've run out of time.
Yeah, you know, you show up at a gunfight with a knife and you take a couple of slashes at the guy with the gun, eventually he's going to shoot you. You don't keep slashing at him.
Yeah. Oh man.
Well,
I don't know where else to go with this, Kevin. I just, you know, I just see that if Israel does retaliate, you know, Iran has said it's over. We're not going to do anything more. So
unless you strike us. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, unless you attack us again, we're not doing anything. And yet here I know that even on CTV question period today, which is it's not in the House of Commons, but television program Sunday afternoon analysis thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we had an Israeli official again saying that, no, we're going to do something. We're going to respond. That to me scares the living daylights out of me.
Yeah, me too. Because Iran is kind of like Vladimir Putin. If they say we're going to do this, they will do it. And they've said they will strike quickly and with much greater force. And I don't know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's fair to say too, that I hope Iran and Russia don't underestimate the amount of power that there is on the other side too, because if there's escalation here, the other side is going to escalate. The United States has a lot of firepower too, man. And yeah. This is the risk.
Yeah.
So, and,
but now you have Johnson in, you know, Congress in the United States. He's going to push through aid for Israel. Can't get that aid out for Ukraine, but he's going to separate it and send it to Israel. So let's see what happens there too.
Yeah.
Don't strike Iran. We won't help you. But here's a whole pile more of missiles and stuff.
Which brings me to Trump, who said that he could end the war in Ukraine in a day. And when I look at what he's proposing, which is basically stop fighting now, let Russia keep what it has. I'm sitting back and I'm thinking, yeah, that's probably about right, because I don't think Putin really wants any more of the territory. He probably, if they asked for a peace deal, I think he'd probably give it to them right now. makes a lot of sense to me. He's been criticized for saying what he said. Zelensky has come out and said, you know, that that's not an option for Ukraine. I think Zelensky needs his head examined. Take peace where you can get it, I would say. What's your assessment of where Trump comes down on that?
You know, reading Trump is kind of like trying to read Netanyahu. he could end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours, but we're going to stand behind Israel 100%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's criticizing Biden for, not being tougher with Iran. So, you know, if he doesn't start a war in one place, or if he ends it in one place, he's just as likely to start it in another place. I think he's another one of those guys who makes decisions without thoroughly thinking them through. Mm-hmm. And it makes me wonder if his mind is all there at his age too.
I agree with that. Some of these, I think, even with RFK Jr., I have to say, I think sometimes he makes the stuff up as he goes along, or he's trying to figure it out on the fly. All three of them, you know, Biden, I don't think he's figuring anything out. I think he's just regurgitating words that they tell him to say or put down on a little note card that he takes out to speak.
When he can read them, yeah.
So, you know, it's clear that all these guys have people behind the scenes who are putting words in their mouths, I would say. I don't know, Kevin. I'm worried, but at the same time, I look around me here and everybody's kind of like not even talking about it. Disengaged. So maybe because we're living in this information world, maybe we're hyper-focused on it to a point where it's a bigger deal to us than maybe it needs to be, or maybe these people around me in this world need to wake up. What do you think?
I don't know. I see the same attitude here. People just don't seem to care. That's, you know, what will happen again. My lovely wife says it's just, you know, Russian attitude, you know, their stoicism, and, you know, when your day comes, it comes. But, it seems like there's an awful lot of people out in the world that have that attitude right now of, we're okay. You know, I'm not going to worry about it. That's going on over there. It won't affect me. I can't understand that thinking, but like you say, maybe it's because we're in it every day.
Yeah. You do tend to get caught up in this world, this information, and, you know, and within our own bubbles as well.
Says the guy streaming while he's on vacation in Costa Rica. Says the other guy who's up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if I wasn't so caught up in my information bubble, I would have said, screw it. And I would have just ignored doing this for the past week. But I don't know. It's addictive too. You worry about things, or at least I do. And I can't help but want to stay up to date on the information and then come on and share it with people. It's just,
don't want the world to end without you knowing it. Yeah.
that's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe otherwise, that would be better for us.
Maybe, but that's what I said in my first live stream from here, is don't let them burn Canada down. I have to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to need that place when the plane comes down to land. But I honestly, you know, it's so volatile. I didn't really want to come on this trip because I'm worried about, you know, our plane's going to be grounded, terrorist attacks. Will they shut the airports down? Is everything going to be disrupted? But you have to live, right? You just have to go on. Yeah.
If you get stuck there, you'll live happy on coffee and feeding the monkeys.
That's right. That's exactly right. And the wildfires here, they're still burning. Let me show you a picture. This is a last night. You can see these wildfires burning at night. Better than you can during the day.
Oh, yeah.
So just take a look at this. See, wow. Sorry that it's not framed up, but see all those dots, all that on this like small mountain or giant hill, whatever you call it. Those are all fires. And during the day, it's just smoky, smoky. You can't see all the flames, but at night you can see how widespread it is and how it spread right across that thing, like very quickly.
The thing that strikes me is it isn't one giant fire. It looks like it's throwing embers and it's starting many, many smaller fires. And that becomes very difficult in mountainous terrain to fight.
Very, very difficult. I don't know how they, you know, and that's the thing. Basically, the firefighting strategy here is to just let it burn. That's what I'm observing, because there's not much they can do. They don't have water bombers. They can't get fire crews up into those areas. So they're just letting it burn for the most part.
Nature's way.
Yeah. You know, and even though the authorities here, I can see it in the distance, smoke coming up against the beautiful sunset here off in the distance. But the authorities here think that a lot of these were probably arson, which is the same situation back in Canada over the last couple of years. A lot of them
farmers burning fields.
And then it gets really, really windy this time of year. Some days yesterday was really windy, so it just spread like crazy, the fires. That's the danger here. But I was thinking today, though, what's the, you know, as you've heard me talking about this week, is there more freedom in Costa Rica? Some people, you know, looking to move here to get away from the tyranny of Justin Trudeau. The one thing I came up with today was, even though I'm not really seeing a whole lot of difference in terms of quality of life one way or the other, there are pros and cons. If there is a nuclear conflict, I don't think Costa Rica is going to be on the target list. I don't see much to blow up here that they would care about.
So yeah, there's that. And on the other hand, you know, you get to die of radiation poisoning a year later.
Yeah. And there would be really almost no safe place to go. So let's hope and pray that it doesn't come to that. Kevin, is there anything else you want to add tonight or think that we might be missing with regard to this?
Just one thought based on what you just said on, you know, do people have more freedom there? You know, anywhere you go, I love it where I am. You know, the government here has as many problems as every other government does. I think part of the freedom people like you or I feel in places like this is the fact that everybody around us isn't overly concerned about this stuff. It's like a different style of life. It's like what comes.
Yeah.
But I bet if that forest fire starts coming, people are still going to run.
Yeah. And I wish they had more resources to fight this here, but they've lost a lot of ground in some national parks here just over the past week to the fires. And it's not very far from even these resorts and hotels where they've invested a lot of money. So it would be tragic to lose these facilities and put these jobs at risk too, because the tourism industry is helping to prop up the economy here and raise the standard of living for a lot of people. So that's a good thing too. But, you know, freedom too, Kevin, is largely a state of mind, a choice, just like happiness, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So with that, sir, I think, you know, what I'm going to do is my family is here with me and I've been neglecting them for the past couple of hours preparing for this and joining you on the broadcast tonight. So I think we're going to wrap it up for tonight. And I just want to thank you again so much for coming on and helping us understand all of this.
My pleasure, Rick. Always here if you want me to give a comment on anything.
Okay. And folks, with that, we will wrap it up. And thank you, everybody, for joining us on the program tonight. I will not be back tomorrow because it's a travel day. I have to get back to the country, to Canada. Hopefully, it's still there when I arrive. And we're still going to keep on fighting for freedom. And I will see you the day after tomorrow on the flip side.
Have a good trip back.
This has been a Maverick Multimedia Productions.